Hey there, Battle for Liberty listener. Are you looking to start up a website, maybe a podcast or a blog, or even a website for your business? Well, if so, I've got the deal of a century for you. If you want to start a website, you have to have web hosting. And I think you should get your web hosting through Bluehost. It's the web hosting I use for the podcast here at the Battle for Liberty. Bluehost has some of the best prices you will ever see for web hosting. Just $3.95 a month, but you have to use my special link in order to get that special price. So go over to battleforliberty.com/blue to sign up for your web hosting today. It's easy, it's fast, they're very responsive, and you're going to get a great price. That's battleforliberty.com/blue. The Battle for Liberty, episode 52.
This is the Battle for Liberty.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Battle for Liberty. Once again, I'm your host, Mike Tilden. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast dedicated to the journey of the libertarian novice. Don't ever miss an episode of The Battle for Liberty. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes and Stitcher. That way, every episode will be delivered to your device with no effort required. It couldn't be easier. All right, there has been a lot going on surrounding the topic of free speech lately. And, you know, rather than get bogged down in the silliness, I decided it would be a better use of our time to speak to someone who's actually doing something positive for the cause of free speech. So this week, I'm speaking with Ben Kolodny, the founder of the website libertiesfuture.com. He's also the national director of the Prager Force Video Production Committee. Ben focuses on college activism, specifically universities and their attempts to stifle free expression. Ben is an expert when it comes to the anti-free speech organizations like Antifa and By Any Means Necessary. Ben has delivered speeches about libertarianism to both high school and college students, and has extensive speaking and debating experience. So, join me in welcoming Ben to the show. Ben, thanks so much for being on the Battle for Liberty.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Mike.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you on. You and I got connected with each other, I believe, through a private Facebook group that we're both a part of. And you had introduced yourself, and as soon as you did, I checked out your YouTube page, which we're going to talk about here in just a moment, and I knew you'd be a perfect guest here on the Battle for Liberty. So thanks for being here, and what I'd like for you to do, since my listeners probably don't know who you are, I want you to let us know who you are and describe how you came to be a libertarian, because that is a rite of passage for anyone on the Battle for Liberty. So who is Ben Kolodny, and how did you become a libertarian?
Well, I'm a free speech activist. I work very, very hard to make sure that our college activists are able to talk about the important battles for liberty that they're having on college campuses. I work with groups that try and protect free speech movements in the real world as well. And I came to libertarianism through a very long and convoluted path. On multiple occasions in my life, I've come into instances in which I've been directly penalized, directly harmed by some of the government's policies. When I was 12 years old, I needed to go to a therapeutic treatment center, and it was actually illegal to have one of these places in my home state of California. So I had to fly three states over to, you know, be ripped from my family for over 2 years to get the help that I needed. That immediately made me resentful towards the state and towards government in general. I've also come into instances just multiple times where I couldn't get a job, and I was in a state where the minimum wage was $10 an hour, and I didn't have any real skills to offer to people that would be worth $10 an hour, so I was penalized by that as well. And as I grew older, I kept seeing that there were all these roadblocks, not just my life, but in everyone's lives, that made it so that it was just difficult to live and be prosperous. The final nail in the coffin for me was when I was in high school, and I needed to run for a public office in a faux election that we were doing. So I randomly chose the Libertarian Party, and this was in 2012, right after Ron Paul's second campaign. And so I looked into Ron Paul's stuff, and at first I was like, oh my God, this stuff is ridiculous. The gold standard? Silly. You know, free trade? Silly. And then as I got to really understand it more and more, I'm like, that's a lot more compelling argument than I had thought. And slowly through this kind of trying to pretend to be a libertarian, I became a full-fledged libertarian.
Wow, that's a really unique tale. I mean, for all the guests that I have on the show here, I asked them to recount how they became a libertarian, and not that my other guests have any less credibility, nothing of the sort, but you have really lived the stories that we tell on this show in terms of the minimum wage and healthcare. These are hot button topics for libertarians, and you've lived through the harms that the state imposes. That's really fantastic. So what have you done with those experiences?
I've done a lot. And I'm maybe not as accomplished as many of your guests. I'm just starting out. I'm 22 years old and still in college. But I'm working to allow and teach my other students and my friends and family and extended family and anyone who will listen to me, essentially, that there are options other than the state. I work with some of my students to help them find jobs that might be more gray market oriented, so that they can get paid and get experience, so they can break into the fields that are so heavily restricted by our state with the minimum wage. I also have a show that comes out once a week called Liberty's Future. I work for a student organization called Prager Force, which is the student activism arm of the Prager U brand, and that's more conservative oriented. So my goal with Liberty's Future is to create 5-10 minute videos that explain very, very thoroughly the libertarian case for the world and for every different issue I cover, because they are an effective and powerful tool to allow people to really understand issues that they might not have hours and hours and hours to go over. My dream goal is to create a libertarian media outlet, something like Reason and Fee combined into kind of a popular culture as well as informative source for information and entertainment for libertarians and for people who aren't libertarians but can be persuaded to be.
This is amazing. I think you're being very modest, and that's a really good trait. Don't ever lose that. You know, you say you haven't done as much as some other people, and to be sure, that's true. Neither of us are Tom Woods or Bob Murphy. Fair. But, I mean, you've started a YouTube series of videos that are incredibly informative, well-researched, well-thought-out, well-spoken. You're working with Prager University. You're teaching young people, and you're still 22 and in college. I mean, this is the example of what we need in the libertarian movement. We need young people who are willing to get educated, spend the time, do the research, and then try to spread the message. And so this is absolutely fantastic. So you touched on Liberty's Future, and I'd like to spend just a couple of moments there. You referenced it's a series of YouTube videos, which of course I'll be linking to the YouTube channel on the show notes page, which for this week will be battleforliberty.com/52. Battleforliberty.com/52. You can find everything we're talking about this week. So tell us a little bit about Liberty's Future. You told us a little bit of the intro, but so how many videos do you have, and what are a couple of the things that you talk about?
Well, I think right now we just came out with the 14th episode, and I think there might be 15 or 16 videos total, two of which are my speaking engagements, places I've gone to talk about the things that I like to talk about. And some of the things I like to cover are any number of very important and powerful issues. I recently covered reparations, the concept that the United States should pay African-American descendants of slaves for their ancestors' suffering. I touched on why socialism is terrible. I've covered healthcare. But the overwhelming focus of the show and of my activism in general is free speech and college oriented. And I've talked about the restrictions of free speech on college campuses. I've talked about restrictions on free speech globally. And I'm working on that and the, you know, absolutely ridiculous and factually incorrect things that are being pushed on kids in colleges.
Okay, great. I'm glad you went that direction, because that's exactly what I want to talk about. For sure, I can already tell we're going to have you on another future episode of the show to talk about things like minimum wage and reparations and all that other stuff. But I do agree with you that the idea of free and open dialogue, both in the public sphere and in the private sphere, are in danger right now. And that seems to be something that you've focused on, which I think is so important. So let's talk about free speech. You have kind of honed in specifically on college campuses. Why are you so interested in free speech on college campuses in particular?
Because it doesn't exist. I mean, to say that it doesn't exist is an understatement in some cases. And I don't mean to be hyperbolic or come out as if I'm exaggerating. The worst thing I could do right now is leave your listeners thinking that I'm lying or I'm exaggerating. But in my own experience, people are shut down for having controversial opinions. I've seen riots happen, not personally yet, but almost in several instances. And people get hurt because of differing points of view. And the horrific truth of the matter is that modern day colleges are re-education institutions where students are taught Marxism. And I don't mean that as a derogatory term for Bernie Sanders type socialism, but I mean honest to God Marxism. Things that ridiculous things like gender is a spectrum, or you can choose to be or to identify as other than human. These really harmful and destructive beliefs that are factually incorrect. And there is no way to challenge these views. There's no way to fight back against them because college activists are banned. They're shut down. Some are even arrested for handing out copies of the Constitution. And that's why it's really important, because if we lose the colleges in this battle, it doesn't matter how many YouTube videos I produce or how many podcasts you produce. There's just going to be an endless supply of cultural and actual honest to God economic Marxists taking the place of the people we've helped teach.
Okay, so I hear what you're saying. I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate, okay?
Sure.
I hear what you're saying, and let's say I'm Joe Conservative who's worried about this but not necessarily convinced that it's the danger that you say that it is. So I may say something to you along the lines of, okay, Ben, you seem like a good guy, you seem nice, but I'm kind of worried that you're just voicing your singular experience. What evidence is there that this is systemic all throughout the university system?
92% of all colleges have what's called a speech code, which is a list of topics, things, and what you can and cannot talk about. These are things like you can't offend someone. You can't talk about certain racial issues if they are offensive. 92% of the colleges surveyed by the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education have these speech codes. 40% of them are what are considered highly restrictive. And what they do is serve to completely shut down any speech that might be considered offensive. More than that, though, one in, I believe it's 8 or might be 1 in 10 colleges have what's called a speech zone, which is an area in which students are allowed to be politically active. That's a small, oftentimes 1% of 1% of the entire area of a college campus in which a student can be politically active. And if they leave these areas, if they are or violate speech codes, they can be suspended or they can be expelled. Some other sanctions as well. But for these speech codes, you can be even arrested. Students not that long ago were arrested for handing out a copy of the Constitution, like I said just a moment ago. The idea that there is not a systemic problem with free speech on our college campuses completely ignores everything that's actually happening.
Okay, so, but how do they get away with it then? I mean, if we have a First Amendment, and I guess now we as libertarians, just for the moment, are speaking strictly about public universities and public colleges.
Right.
If there's a First Amendment that supposedly protects your activities on public grounds, how are these institutions getting away with this?
So that's a fascinating question, because every time one of these speech codes or speech zones is challenged in court, they have lost. There's not a single instance in which they've won. But the problem is students don't understand their rights, and they don't understand that they have resources to fight back against these oppressive institutions. For instance, there are groups like the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education or Campus Reform or the Leadership Institute, which all help sue or write letters or bring down these speech codes and speech zones. But I'm guessing most of your listeners haven't heard of any of those things. And the problem's worse with college students, who are being taught that, you know, capitalism is oppressive and don't even know their First Amendment right and don't understand that their First Amendment rights being violated.
Yeah, they're all running around talking about capitalism being oppressive while holding an iPhone and a Starbucks latte.
Right. And you know, living on an institution or going to an institution which shuts down their right to, you know, complain or even protest capitalism in some instances. Not that capitalism is something that should be protested, but their right to protest should be affirmed.
Sure, absolutely. I don't think any libertarian or even, you know, I'm really hard on conservatives sometimes on this show. And so this is going to be one of the times that I'm not. I mean, most libertarians and conservatives are the only people I know. They'll abide by that old saying, I disagree with what you say, but I defend to the death your right to say it.
100%.
I don't know any leftists that, and I'm talking strict leftists. I mean, I got a lot of neighbors who are liberals who would probably agree with that. But they're kind of, you know, run-of-the-mill liberals. But we're talking militant leftists here. They don't subscribe to that notion. It doesn't exist anymore.
Very few do. I know a couple, and they are targeted for harassment by their own side for having these, you know, horrible views that free speech should be allowed, and it's okay to be friends with someone you disagree with.
Yeah, what a shame. Okay, so what can college students do? Not only to protect themselves, but... you know, if they think that their free speech is being infringed, what can they do to protect themselves? And what should they do to better educate themselves?
So a couple things on that. I have an article on my website right now, libertiesfuture.com, that talks about how to avoid indoctrination. So there are a huge number of resources I touch on there about how you can fight back and how you can protect your student or yourself, if you are a student, from the effects of these colleges. But other than that, if you are being shut down for your free speech activism or you're being shut down for your activism in general, record absolutely everything. The old saying goes, pics or it didn't happen. Video is better. Pictures are good. Recordings are fine. Reach out to groups like the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education or campusreform.org. Turning Point News is another good one. And all of these organizations can help you fight back and report and express to the greater nation, the nation at large, what's happening on your college campus, because most people don't know about these things. So spread the message, do not be silent, and record everything you can, and then go to any group that I mentioned, and they will help you fight back against them.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, we're going to get into activism next, and I guess this will be a great bridge to get into activism in general, but my personal advice when it comes to not being shut down is to always take the high road. You know, when people are being rude and screaming in your face, you're always going to look better if you're the one that's trying to be rational, keeping your voice down, not backing down by any means, but avoid yelling, avoid name calling, avoid ad hominems, things like that.
Oh, completely.
You know, you have to come prepared with history, knowledge, economics, facts. Mm-hmm. If you come with that ammunition and then you're able to maintain your composure and the other person looks like a screaming banshee.
Yes.
There's not the facts are what's going to help you in a trial or a court of law or anything like that. But in terms of public opinion, your demeanor and your level of respect, that's really what's going to win the day. Do you agree with that?
Oh, completely. Every single major victim of this kind of what I call leftist attack and leftist witch hunts on these college campuses is immediately tried in the court of public opinion. If they are aggressive, if they are mean or seen as bullying, it doesn't matter how correct they are in whatever it is they're doing, but they're immediately blacklisted. They can be more easily gotten rid of. They can be more easily sued or more easily fired for whatever it is they're doing. Look at the example of Brett Weinstein, who's an Evergreen State College professor who was physically threatened and shouted down and chased off his college campus. In every interaction he has had with protesters and with other staff who were on the side of the protesters, he was completely calm and completely cool. And that gave him the moral authority to say, look at how absolutely insane these people are. But if he were shouting back or if he were calling them names, then that argument, that strong argument completely goes away.
Yeah. I think that's the strategy to take. All right. So let's jump into public activism. So in addition to all of the things that you do, you're also an activist. I mean, there's no question about it. You give speeches, you teach young people, you show up in purposefully to protests in order to have a principled counter argument. So I want to ask you, why is it important to go out and put your beliefs on display in public? I mean, most of the people I know would say, look, it's not convincing anybody. It's just yelling at each other. Why is it important to do this?
for a couple of reasons. The United States right now is so deeply divided along political lines, even geographically, like where you are determines the political views you're going to hear and the political views your neighbors have. But also because there's a what I've seen as a great dehumanization of the other. Groups like Antifa or Anti-Fascist Action or By Any Means Necessary, which are two leftist groups which attack people anywhere right of center, do not view people they disagree with as human. I've looked into their eyes. I've talked to them. I've tried to have conversations with them. And as a Jewish libertarian, I'm called a Nazi. They have decided already far in advance that anyone they disagree with is evil. And the reason that that can happen is because they're never exposed to opinions they disagree with in a healthy dialogue. Every time they've heard a conservative or libertarian view, it's in a way that they view as aggressive or in a manner that oppresses them. And the reason that is because there's not enough conversing and dialogue going on. So just by going to a protest or a rally or speaking about something so important to someone who completely disagrees with you, you are creating a bridge that might not otherwise be there, in which they view you more as a real person and people who agree with you more as real people than they would otherwise. As for the speaking and as for the making of videos, I'm trying to inform people who might agree with me or inform the moderates or middle ground who does not know about the issue in a perspective that they might not get otherwise.
Do you think there's any reaching people who are already in Antifa?
Yes, actually I do. When I was in Portland for a free speech rally, there were two separate sides of the protest. There were the counter-protesters who were kept separate from the protesters. And one young Antifa man came over and talked with me for a little bit. And we had a great conversation for about 10 minutes. And we decided that we should expand the conversation, bring people from multiple sides over and talk in a place that they could be safe and not have to worry about the other side attacking them. And he and I had a nice long conversation for about 15 minutes until he was removed from our side of the rally by the security people there and forced to go away. And that broke the connection we had been building. The fact, though, that he and I talked for as long as we did, and the fact that he and I parted as maybe not friends, but as people who viewed each other more as people, is a testament that people can be reached. Most of the Antifa people aren't ideologues. They're not completely set in their ways. They view their leaders, whoever's organizing the protest or whoever's leading the charge into the right-wing rally with the bricks and the bats and the skateboards swinging, as intellectuals and intelligent. And they want to follow that lead. So if you give them a perspective that is different than that perspective, different than their leader's perspective, you give them a chance to really seriously open their minds.
That's a great story. I hope you don't lose that feeling, because I know too many people in the liberty movement who are of the opinion that most people that are that far left of mm-hmm. center are not able to be reached, at least not with rational thought. And it sounds like you may have either found the extreme minority or mm-hmm. you have the tenacity and the capability to reach some of those people. I know there are there's several people with that sort of personality that are able to reach those people. And so I hope you keep using it. But let's not to be sensational, but I do want to hear about some of the problems that you've had with Antifa, because that was a great story of success. Yeah. Talking to someone of that movement. But can you tell me about some other experiences that you may have had with Antifa? First of all, for people who don't know, why don't we back up a little bit and just tell us, who is Antifa? What do they supposedly believe and stand for?
Antifa, or Anti-Fascist Action, is a left-wing group made up of an assortment of leftist ideologies. And again, I'm not talking about Bernie Sanders type democratic socialism, but I'm talking about Marxism, anarcho-communism, and Stalinism type ideologies, who work together to fight against the organization of what they view as fascist movements. Unfortunately, when they view you as a fascist, it doesn't actually mean you're a fascist. All too often, it means you're a Republican or a conservative or a Trump supporter. And that singles you out for violence, and it makes it okay to hurt you. Their goal is to disrupt the organization and the creation of a Nazi state, essentially. And they do this by going to any protest or any rally that is right of center and instigating violence. I've heard them described on the Tom Woods Show as professional rioters, and I think that's a very good description of them.
Yeah, I also tend to like, not just because it's funny, but because it's tragically accurate. I like Tom's definition of how the Antifa types define Nazi. Have you heard that?
What is it?
He says the Antifa types define Nazi as the person I'm currently punching. Which
that's very true.
Is like I said, it's tragically true. I mean, it's also hilariously funny, but yeah. There's some truth to it, as anything funny does have truth to it. So okay, so what has their history been so far? What have they been involved in, and why are they so dangerous?
So they've been, if you've heard of any quote clashing between right and left wing groups in the last couple of years, you've heard about Antifa either directly or indirectly. When Milo Yiannopoulos tried to go speak at UC Berkeley, they were the people who attacked the campus, burned it down, pepper sprayed people they disagreed with who were there for the Milo show, or even just innocent bystanders. They are also involved in many of the anti-G20 protests or G8 protests. They'll go and they will break down windows. They will attack Starbucks. They will hurt anyone they view as differing in opinion. They view themselves as what they call a community self-defense organization, meaning that they're out there to defend the communities that are marginalized and oppressed by, you know, capitalism, white supremacy, patriarchy, et cetera, but also often they're just the instigators of violence. And I view this as a form of therapy for them. It's their outlet for whatever rage is going on in their day-to-day life. But they've been involved in essentially every attack against right-wing organizations in the recent years.
Yeah, certainly not a group that I really want to be around, so I'm happy that people like you are willing to go try to speak to them, or at least show a different viewpoint at some of their events. So speaking of which, let's talk about some events you have coming up. What's next on the radar for Ben Kaladny?
Well, I'm going out to Berkeley to give a speech on the problems with Marxism, actually. Hopefully I make it back in one piece.
Okay, we're definitely going to put that on the show notes page. Do you have a date and location yet, or is that still being worked out?
Yes, it's August 27th in MLK Park in Berkeley, California.
Okay, is there a website for that?
There's a Facebook link that I will try and send you.
Okay, yeah, we'll get that up on the show notes page, which again is battleforliberty.com/52. All right, so we could probably talk all night, but we should probably wrap it up. So where can people get in touch with you and see more of your videos? What's the best place for people to go see you?
Well, if you'd like to view my videos, you can check me out on YouTube. My channel's called Liberty's Future, or you can go to my website, libertiesfuture.com. If you'd like to reach out to me directly, check out my Twitter, @Liberty's Future, or on Facebook, I have a page called Liberty's Future. It's all very consistent.
Yeah, that's some very good branding. I'm proud of the branding that you've done there. So, okay, great. Libertiesfuture.com. What a great domain name. And Ben, we are definitely going to be in touch again in the future. We've got a lot more to talk about. I think this was just the tip of the iceberg. So you are welcome back on this show anytime. Everybody, please go check out Liberty's Future. And Ben, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. All right, that's going to do it for this week. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Ben. I know I did. It's really nice to talk to a young person who's so passionate about the topic of free speech. I think he's going to do a lot of good for this movement. Don't forget to check out the show notes page, battleforliberty.com/52. In particular, I want to draw your attention to the YouTube video of Ben talking with the young Antifa member. It's really worth your time. So battleforliberty.com/52 to check that out. And don't forget, if you want to support the show, it's really easy. You can head on over to battleforliberty.com/support and join the patrons today. You can join for as little as $1 per month. And in doing so, you unlock all sorts of great benefits. You gain access to things like members-only blog posts, behind-the-scenes pictures, video posts. I just posted a 13-minute video to my Patreon page about a local tax referendum. So if you want to check that stuff out, you've got to be a patron. battleforliberty.com/support. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes or Stitcher. And above all else, keep spreading the word about the battle for liberty. Until next time, battle on.